you should hear what Misty Winston is talking about.
I want to actually talk a little bit about the class divide with you, because I think that, you know, you just mentioned the class war, and we are in, I don't think people recognize it, we are in a class war and have been for some time. The middle class, the working class, we perhaps have been unaware of the fact that we're in a class war, but that's been going on for a long time. So let's talk a little bit about that and the class divide. Well, how do you see things right now? Because I feel like right now there's a lot of distractions being thrown our way to kind of prevent us from looking, from noticing the man behind the curtain.
Right. I think people really need to pay attention to what's going on economically in this country. And I don't just mean in reference to inflation. For example, I talked about this the other night. Bill Gates is actually buying farmland in the United States, a lot of farmland. And there was a woman that came on my show about 2 weeks ago, and she was telling me that Bill Gates is stealing water from her town.
Misty Winston on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We've all been told how important it is to take the COVID vaccine, but there's another side you don't hear about. Meet Maddie. She's 13. She believes in vaccines. She signed up for Pfizer's clinical trial. Today, she can't walk. Maddie stepped up for America. Let's step up for Maddie. Learn about Maddie. Go to vaxsafety.org. Paid for by the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation.
This is Truth for Health, Defending Our Freedom with Dr. Lee for Freedom on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Truth for Health, Defending Our Freedom. And I am your host, Dr. Lee for Freedom, American Physicians, and CEO of the public charity Truth for Health Foundation. Go to our website, truthforhealth.org, and sign up for our alerts, providing balanced, truthful, peer-reviewed medical information the mainstream media is censoring. We are the voice of the voiceless, and we are silent no more. And welcome to today's show on TNT Radio, your voice of freedom around the world. Well, I want to welcome back to my Truth for Health, the rest of the story show, Dr. Mike Yeadon, whom you've just heard about his background in the introduction. Dr. Yeadon, thank you so much for joining us today. And I know you have a lot of updates on the vaccine front. You have worked in pharma research for your entire career. You know about drug development. You know about safety standards. You know about manufacturing standards. You have a lot of research that you've been working on with a whole team of people. And I'd like to talk about what you've been uncovering. And you were one of the early whistleblowers warning about the reproductive damage with these experimental gene mm-hmm. therapy shots and the lipid nanoparticle coating. So I want to revisit that. Thank you for being with us today.
Well, Dr. Lee, thank you. It's really great to be speaking to you again. It's my privilege, actually. I always say to the hosts that are both journalists and investigators, you know, if it wasn't for your platform, I wouldn't be able to reach anyone. So it's a fantastic partnership. And you're right, there's so much evil stuff going on. I spent my whole life in pharmaceutical R&D. And because I'm a Brit, I forget occasionally to blow the trumpet where I think it would be relevant to your audience. I am the most senior former pharmaceutical company executive, certainly on the R&D side, in the world to be speaking out. So this is very out of character. As like a quiet professional guy, I did quite well, but I didn't campaign to save the tree or the whales or, you know, climate change or anything. I just kept my head down and did my work. However, in the early part of 2020, I was in early retirement doing a little bit of consulting. I started to notice really strange things going on, which I'm afraid it. I ended up concluding that the British government's advisors were lying to us all on the TV. And I'm afraid 2 years later, they've not got any better. And with Lee and colleagues, we've tracked down a bunch of very serious defects with the vaccines, just in their design, their development, and their clinical profile. And we can talk about several of those aspects. But I I believe, unfortunately, there's still quite a lot of unpleasant things to realize and to try and warn people about them as we get sight of them.
Well, you are right. And I think let's start with what your biggest concern is right now that you would like to warn the public from what you're seeing in the data analysis.
Yeah, I will do that. I mean, certainly, I wouldn't say this lightly. I've never been anti-vax. I would say I was pro innovative new medicines. That was my business. I led a team of researchers whose goal was to find, you know, new and worthwhile medicines that would deliver benefit with acceptable safety, so they could ultimately get patented and sold as medicines. That's what I was doing. I didn't work in the field of vaccinology, and I think I just accepted vaccines are, quote, safe and effective like everybody else. So my kids were vaccinated. I was as a child. I hadn't ever thought anything much about it until coming into this COVID era. And it was clear by the early, I would say by mid-year 2020, no earlier than that, it was clear, according to Dr. Bill Gates, I'm joking, that the world wouldn't get back to normal till everybody had been vaccinated, which is literally absurd. You, what do? You never vaccinate people who are not at risk. We vaccinate people who are at risk, even if you had a vaccine. And then our good friend Tony Blair, three times Prime Minister of UK, said, oh, well, we'll all need these vaccine passports to give people confidence to, you know, go back out again. And I thought, well, I know that if you haven't got any symptoms of respiratory illness, you're not a threat to anyone. And that's true. So I thought, I spotted two important people lying early on, and British government's scientific advisors lying about the characteristics of this virus, what you must do to escape it. And so I'm afraid I was expecting, you know, worrisome things to happen. I would say, what two things are worrying me most? I would say, at the moment, where it comes to the vaccines, I've concluded reluctantly that I don't think they've got any redeeming features at all, and I don't think anyone should use them, because it's early days in there since they've been commercially rolled out, about a year, that the news since that rollout has been, you know, undeniably awful. And we'll talk about the databases. But the most important thing is, in the last 2 years, clever physicians, you know, Lee, you and your colleagues amongst them, have characterized a good handful of safe and effective early pharmaceutical treatments. So why would we ask anyone to take a chance on a new technology, relatively new vaccine that clearly has shown some safety issues, when you could just treat the people who get ill with medicine? So my big worries are still, although it's fading a little bit, I don't think it's going away. There's a lot of pressure around the world to, you know, roll up and get your jabs, get your fourth injections, crazy stuff like that. The other thing that I kind of knew about, and I've really only formalized it in the last 2 weeks. So I've given several interviews on the topic of basically scientific advisors and governments lying to you. And I've used the phrase the COVID lies. So, for example, pretending that if you have no symptoms but a positive PCR test, you could be spraying this virus all over people and you could kill granny or infect your neighbor. That's not true. The so-called asymptomatic transmission is not true. But the really worrying part, Lee and the audience, is this. This is really important. Maybe we could do an interview on this specific topic, because people won't believe it. I'm afraid I have to go as far as to say that every single major thing that the government and its advisors told you about this virus, and every single measure they asked you to take or imposed upon you, were ineffective. So it's all lies, literally all lies. Now, that's a scary thought, because everyone got lied to in the same way around at least the democratic world at the same time. And then they all deviated from what we normally do with respiratory virus epidemics and pandemics, which is, if you're sick, stay home, wash your hands more often, that's it. So we deviated from what we've done for decades and imposed this really crazy bunch of things like lockdowns, mass testing of the healthy, border restrictions, school closures. And when you combine, as it were, the bad advice and the lying, and I think the goal of that was to frighten us and kind of funnel us down to being receptive to vaccines. And then you turn to the vaccines and find they don't work and they're not safe. Then what is a person supposed to think? You know, I cannot I cannot any longer try as I would like to come up with a benign interpretation of what's going on. And I'm afraid, and this one is not a surprise to you, Lee, I know, that I've come to the conclusion that the whole thing is malign. It's bad. And I think the goal is to reward every person who gets jabbed with a vaccine passport, which is nothing more than mandatory digital ID. I think that's what they're basically using, the scare of the virus to make you get the vaccine, to install digital ID. And we can see coming up on the outside lane, I heard Federal Reserve talk about this, and yesterday the Bank of England governor talk about this. They want to bring digital money in place to remove cash and replace your normal means of purchases using central bank digital currencies. It'll roll off the tongue, folks. Trust me, CBDCs, central bank digital currencies. And I'm afraid people are not suspicious enough. If you have allowed yourself to be coerced into having a vaccine, an injection, and your reward is this digital ID, it won't be long before you're required to waive this digital ID in order to enter any regulated space that the government might choose, like entering a store, a theater, an airplane, whatever, your office.
And even to buy food. Exactly. We're seeing in many countries already in Europe.
They're doing that. Yeah. And so I think, just to paint the picture really quickly, that if they succeed in persuading people there's this scary monster of a virus, run for cover, get the vaccine, here's your vaccine passport, aren't you virtuous? Once they've convinced us that we need it for safety, then we'll understand that it's mandatory to share it every time you're asked for it. Otherwise, they could just give you a number and say, look, give us your ID. They need to scare people so they're convinced that it's safe, that it's protecting them, and then they will understand the need for and cooperate with the requirement to waive this digital ID, a QR code, whatever. And it could be, as you said, Lee, on a food store, could be travel. I think it'll be ultimately everything. So I've never been a 5G conspiracist, but what I do know about this is it will provide, as it were, more and more refined grid location coverage. So wherever you are, literally leaving the front door of your apartment or whatever, you might have to present this pass. And then on the other side, the money, if that's the central bank digital currency with no cash, and the excuse for that is the world's economy is in a mess because of war and overspending because of COVID, and then they'll say, look, we have no choice but to rescue ourselves using these electronic currency. And a friend of mine, in fact, someone people will know, Catherine Austin Fitz, reminds us that if you've got only electronic money that's controlled by whoever controls that database, it's not going to be the person you elect. It'll be, I don't know, Cisco or Microsoft or Amazon. Then when you present your digital money, let's say you're allowed to be in the store because you're good and you've got your vax pass, and you present your phone or whatever with a digital code to spend some money, if whoever it is doesn't want you to have meat, the transaction will just be refused. It wouldn't be blanket. It would be like an AI algorithm. So if you've already had sausages from down the street and a piece of bacon, then when you go and get some beef, even though you think you've earned the money and can choose to do that, they'll just say no. And she points out two other things that are worse, much worse. If they don't want you to go further than 5 miles from your home, you'll find that will be set in and your coordinates are known, where you are is known. So when you try and buy a bottle of water, we won't be able to do it. And then finally, she points out that if they don't want you to buy pizza, you will not be able to buy pizza. So folks, even if you believed in the honesty and the warmth of the human hearts of the administration, and all these tech companies, you'd be crazy. But let's say you did for a moment. Don't let them install what would be a control grid. And as Lee and I discussed the vaccines, you'll realize that the last thing you want, if you've not had it yet, the last thing you need is this injection. And as they always say with smoking, today is the best day to give up COVID-19 vaccines. So help us by, basically do not step up for further COVID-19 vaccines. They're not necessary and they're unsafe and they're a path to this digital future. And then quite separately, don't let them take cash away. Draw out cash and use it, as part of your spending, maybe cash day once a week or every other day. And that way, I think we've got a chance to hold these people off, whoever they are, for long enough for more of our colleagues to wake up, because I think that's how we win.
Well, I think you're exactly right, Mike. And the other serious issue, in addition to the micromanaging of people's lives and the control of what you can, how you can travel. And we're already seeing that, for example, with, I have colleagues and friends in Chile, where I was, my husband and I were working from 2013 to 2016. And we have friends there, and they are not allowed to travel more than 50 kilometers from their home. Wow. Based on vaccine status. And I think that many people in the United States don't realize how locked down many other countries are. So there's that aspect, the control. But there's an even bigger one that I'm very concerned about. Mm-hmm. And that is the rising deaths that are being reported by insurance companies who are seeing anywhere from 30 to 60% increase in all causes of death in 2021 after the vaccine rollout compared to 2020. And then we just had reports from the UK in the last week that the super vaxxed UK seniors are dying at higher rates. It's showing negative efficacy against COVID illness. Mm-hmm. And we're now seeing across European countries, the UK, Ireland, Scotland, more people in hospitals, and they are fully vaccinated. 95% of adults in Ireland are fully vaccinated.
I know. I'm not surprised.
Nearly. And they are at the highest number of hospitalizations in the last 12 months. So the vaccines are not working, but they're also causing more death. Yes. I know you have some data from a team of a small group of researchers that you've been working with that is showing a variation in batches and adverse events. And that's that's a level of lack of quality control in manufacturing that we've never seen before with products that are allowed to be on the market. Tell us what you've been uncovering with the different adverse event rates in different batches of these vaccines, particularly with Pfizer.
I can do that. We focus mostly on that, but the general patterns are also true with Moderna. We don't have data on AstraZeneca because it's not available in the US. So just for information, if any of your listeners want to go and read up about this, it's a very good website called one word, how bad, H-O-W-B-A-D, one word, howbad.info. And you'll find the analysis I shall talk about and many things like 10 or 20 slide decks and a few short documents. So bottom line, if we became aware independently, so there's like four or five of us working on this, and we come together because we spotted this issue. Basically, some people, we were looking at VAERS, and it turns out that amongst the things that goes into this vaccine adverse event reporting system is the batch or lot number. So it should be there, and the type of vaccine and when you were injected, and then someone is reporting that there was an adverse event that could be from headaches all the way through to death. Turns out most of the reports are being done by doctors and nurses. So it's simply not true that the VAERS is unreliable or has a bunch of crazies putting the reports in. All not true. It looks, in fact, like the same frequency of basically the same small fraction of adverse events are being reported as in any other year. It's just there are a lot more of them. I know we'll talk about this, but certainly in Germany, one of the medical insurers believes that between 3 and 4%, one in 30 or so, of the German population who've been vaccinated, that many people have sought medical care reimbursable. That is, they were sufficiently ill that they went to see at least a family practitioner and for a consultation, diagnosis and treatment and so on. For after vaccination, one in 30. I mean, normally we would tolerate one in 50,000, something like that. If it was worse than that, we pull it from the market. And yet we've got 3 or 4% in Germany. And I guess it's going to be the same everywhere else, where people are sufficiently ill over weeks and months afterwards that they think you know, I need help, and they go and see a doctor. So, yeah, when you were saying that we're now seeing that the efficacy, you know, doesn't look good, I was not that surprised. So just to recap, I wrote with Dr. Wolfgang Vodag, a German public health guy, a petition to the European Medicines Agency, 1st of December 2020. And I think we were the first people to lay out our science-based concerns about the design of these things. We were worried about the potential for acute and anaphylaxis-style responses. And I mentioned that because that happened the day they started rolling it out. We were also concerned about off-target, that is sort of autoimmune diseases that could include things neurological and others. And a lot of people say they do think that is what's happening over the long term. People are remaining ill, you know. And then thirdly, and this was controversial, I was very concerned that it looked to me there were reproductive health risks. And Lee, as you said, I think the Department of Defense, the DMED database, makes that very clear. We're looking at, I think it's 2.5 to 3-fold increase in spontaneous loss of pregnancy. So we had reasons to believe that these could be dangerous. And the reason is that all four of the leading vaccines cause your body to be turned over to become a factory for manufacturing part of this virus, part of the pathogen, which I think is really, it's kind of a creepy thing. And the way it does it is there's a DNA or an mRNA code, piece of code, for the virus spike protein. And it, in the case of Moderna and Pfizer, they're wrapped in these lipid nanoparticles to protect them, to allow them to go unseen, as it were, through a cell wall. Whichever cell they land in, and not your shoulder, they'll leak from that injection site. Wherever they go, they express the spike protein. Your body recognizes that as foreign and immediately tries to kill the cell that's expressing it. So it's no surprise to me that wherever the vaccine goes, so your body attacks itself. Myocarditis, I'm convinced that's the cause of myocarditis, plus other factors, brain, the cerebral vein, sinus thrombosis, especially seen in women. I'm confident that's due to overexpression of spike protein because it can cause blood coagulation. So anyway, looking at the design of the vaccines, I had great foreboding, and that was why we wrote to the EMA. At first, we were being told that these vaccines will prevent you getting infected. I mean, if you look at the data on the basis of which the Pfizer was approved, I think they said it was between 90-95% reduction in cases. But, you know, that's not what anyone's saying anymore. They're saying, oh, it doesn't prevent infection. I go, what? That was the basis of approval. That's the basis. It didn't stop you going to hospital or dying. Those studies were too small, so they didn't have very many people who were very sick. No, they definitely told you that it would be a 95% reduction in the risk of getting infected, and they've backed off from that. So what is the basis of approval? Well, there isn't one. There literally isn't one. And what we found, what we've all seen, I think it's uncontroversial now, is that this is, I would say, at least 50 times more injurious than any prior material called vaccine. It might be 100 times, but an unbelievable number of people have died. The USVARS system, I think we're now into the teens of thousands in the US alone. And if I tell people or remind them, if they already had forgotten, that probably only about 1 in 40 adverse events get reported. So if they've got, even say 15,000 on the database, it's probably 750,000 genuinely dead people in the US alone as a consequence of these vaccines. I swear that almost everybody I know knows someone who's ill after vaccination. It's probably about 5 or 6 friends.
Well, I'm seeing it in my clinical practice. Yeah. And clearly, with the major insurance carriers are seeing anywhere from 30-60% rise in the deaths.
Yeah.
In 2021 in their database. And what is even more alarming is that the death rates are the highest in the working population, 18 to 44.
I know, that's shocking.
And that is also fitting with what the military database is showing, and that's a healthy population.
Yeah.
And the deaths in the military and the injuries, myocarditis, brain injury, many other complications across the board, are staggeringly high, in the hundreds of percentages higher.
Yeah, they are. I think I've seen an estimate in some age ranges, Lee, of 10 times normal. So that'd be like 1,000%.
Oh, yes, some of it's even higher than
that. The worst ones. And I've got a feeling it's exactly what you said. The people most at risk, for example, to post-vaccination myocarditis are fit young males. So if you watch tennis, I don't know whether that was what happened to Rafa Nadal, but he certainly had evolving stabbing chest pains recently. And all of these top sports people are extremely fit. They generally don't have angina and difficulty in breathing. If they have an injury, it's related to the sport, like a shoulder or a knee, something like that, or back. But this poor guy, I don't know, but the way he described his own symptoms as a stabbing needle through the middle of his chest, that I've had intercostal injuries, from accidents and so on. That's not how it feels. It's quite different. So, yeah, these things are, they're injuring especially fit young males. But I'm afraid everybody, unlike the virus, everyone is vulnerable to the potential for side effects because they're uncontrolled missiles. Lee, normally, anyone who's taking a prescription medicine, that's a lot of us by middle age, I assure you, when you break open a blister pack or open the bottle and take a capsule, they are required by law to put the same material in each tablet or capsule, time without number, even if it's billions of doses. The amount of variability that they are allowed is tiny. I think it's like less than 0.5%. So that means if you were prescribed Lipitor in London or in Louisiana, it should be the same damn stuff, and it will be. That's because they comply with a whole variety of steps to make sure they've got consistent, high quality product.
Well, that is a critically important point, and I would like for us to talk more about the manufacturing quality standards that are normally in place for products and the fact that when those standards are not met, normally products are pulled from the market. So what are you seeing in the variation in the batches that raises questions about manufacturing quality?
Yeah, certainly. I would say it's completely inconsistent with the idea that this is reproducible, top quality, a consistent manufacturer, that you can have facts like this. Some Pfizer batches of a similar size, about 1.5 million doses per batch, some of them are associated with as many as 6,000 adverse event reports to the AERS, 6,000. Whereas other batches made by the same manufacturer, a similar batch size, about 1.5 million doses, and we'll see as little as 10, 10, 20, 50. So you can't have, the bottom line is it's not the same stuff. The material that was in the batches, which were associated with the 6,000 adverse event reports, it's not the same stuff as the batches that have got maybe, 5, 10, 20 adverse events reports.
What can account for that?
Yeah.
Dr. Eden, account for that degree of variation? I've never heard of this in my entire medical career.
No, it's impossible. And it's very important that I emphasize that. I think Paracelsus and others a long time ago said the dose maketh the poison. So almost every medicine or even a foodstuff that's good at this amount or this dose, if you have more of it and then yet more of it, almost everything will turn out to can harm you, from a glass of water to these damn vaccines. And so it's not a small difference. I'm confident from my 40 years in life sciences, the difference between whatever it is that's in the vaccine vials associated with 6,000 adverse event reports in the one batch, it's not the same stuff. It can't be even a subtle difference either. Now, I don't know, because we don't have access to their quality control records, but what we do know is this. When the regulatory interactions between the sponsor, in this case Pfizer, and the European Medicine Agency, that happened to be leaked by some well-intentioned person. So in November 2020, before they had emergency use authorization, they'd filed their dossier, that's a collection of all of the compendium of all of the studies and characterization, and the technical reviewers in Amsterdam, that's where the EMA is now based, they had, I think it was like 6 or 7 major objections, and 2 of them consisted related to manufacture. The comment was, you have not manufactured even the raw substance, that is the mRNA of a particular length and sequence. They were not able to consistently manufacture that. And believe it or not, that in the end, they were allowed, as long as half of it's the stuff you say it is, that's okay. Seriously, they set a standard because they realized they couldn't do anymore. It's a difficult molecule to work with. No one's ever made genetic vaccines on scale. So literally having to invent the technology as they go. I never thought the design of them was going to be safe and effective anyway, but you have to manufacture them. And they can't. And I think what happens is from batch to batch, and even possibly from vial to vial, as they use automated filling machines, they were not able to stir it. So by the time they've made this broth of mRNA and lipids and, you know, made it into these nanoparticles, then to dispense it into the vials, apparently they couldn't use a stirring system because that made it too unstable. So now imagine having, imagine having like a 5-gallon drum of homebrew. You're making your own beer, and there'll be some heavy particles, some yeast, you know, some water, some froth, and so on. Imagine now you can't stir it, but you're siphoning it from low down in the vessel, from one bottle to another bottle to another bottle. The chances that it's going to be the same stuff from beginning to end of the siphoning, the dispensing, is zero. You know, I think they're in a position like that. And basically, you could see in the nature of the exchange between the sponsor and the regulators that the technical assessors in the regulator were identifying these serious flaws that would prevent approval in any other era. You can imagine them looking over their shoulder and their boss is saying, sign it off. So if there's anyone listening that works at the European Medicines Agency or any of the major regulators like FDA, you know, if you work there or you have a friend that works there that's talked to you about disturbing things, please have them blow the whistle. They will be protected under whistleblower protection. And we need to hear from some people on the inside because we can see the evidence of them attempting to do the right thing. And then Lee, a month later, this agent I was just talking about, it got an emergency use authorization. I'm now in touch with a person who spent 40 years in pharmaceutical manufacturing and quality control. And this person said it's literally impossible they could have fixed those 4, 5, 6 major objections in under 3 or 4 years, not 3 or 4 weeks. So they've gone to market with a product that they're not capable of consistently manufacturing. So my first interpretation was that if they know how to do anything well, it's consistently to manufacture unit doses of medicinal materials. That was a respectful view of Merck and Johnson & Johnson and so on. And so therefore,
and yet they're not doing it for this.
Yeah. I am not sure they could do it if they wanted to, but that does not excuse them under any other circumstances. That there's the 5 and 50 rule that Dr. Peter McCulloch has mentioned. 5 serious adverse events or deaths on a medicine, and they hold an inquiry, maybe a black box warning. Literally, it's a warning with a thick black line outside it. You can't miss it. 50 deaths off the market. And we're probably at 1,750,000 in the US, twice that number. I don't know. It's the killing power of these damn things is enormous. And yet one is still called a conspiracy theorist when you open a public database and say, look, and they go, oh, no, well, that's fraud, all these numbers coming in. No, it isn't. And also the defense database has been leaked and it shows the same basic pattern. Also, the Europeans and the UK separately have their own pharmacovigilance. There's some monitoring, passive monitoring systems. They all say more or less the same thing. These are the most lethal, most injurious medicinal products ever tagged with the word vaccine and intended for public health. And so this is why I say to everybody, you know, I like to be enthusiastic about innovative medicines. I cannot on this occasion. All my years' experience told me before they appeared on the market that their design was at best in error, and since they all made the same mistakes, I'm afraid, Lee, I think that's strong evidence of collusion and malfeasance in their design. And then when it comes to manufacturing, we have got very clear evidence that some batches are much more toxic than others, and that tells us that consistent manufacturing is not happening. And yet, the people who should hold the feet to the fire, the regulators, are not doing their job. So that's a terrible thing. In fact, before I forget, I will forget. Quite early on in the first year, I kind of thought, well, these vaccines are not like to work, but I'm hearing Gates and Blair tell us you've got to have them and you need a vaccine passport to open society. I thought, they're going to chase around the world and inject everybody. I'm not far wrong, am I? They're chasing babies now, 6 months. They're certainly injecting school children all around the world. And then the thing I cautioned people in my first presentations when I kind of put all the pieces together was this. I think they're lying about variants, for example. I don't think the variants are different enough to really worry about, certainly not if you've got a normal immune system. Those of you who have been mugged with the vaccines, maybe it'll be different. But those who have not, don't worry about variants. It's the lies they're attaching to them. But here's the scary part. I then heard a CEO of Moderna and then a CEO of Pfizer saying, don't worry, within 100 days, I think they said, we will have a variant-specific vaccine for you. And I froze because no one is checking their homework. The regulator is not holding them to account. There won't be any new clinical trials for safety. They could literally be injecting you with anything they want. And there's already enough evidence to say these people are not well-intentioned. So under those circumstances, would you allow yourself or a child or a relative to be injected by a product from a company that's paid the largest criminal fine in history, that's Pfizer's $2.3 billion fine. Why would you do that? And especially when there are people like me, never spoken out until sort of COVID disaster, and I'm able to point out that we're being misled and lied to. If you're not frightened, you should be. I don't want you to be more frightened than you should be, because we will win this. And all we need to do is cast seeds of doubt into the minds of everybody by saying, these statements are inconsistent, or here's what we're seeing in the public vigilance databases. You know, if we get enough people who think, hold on a minute, this no longer feels benign, then it will stop. But if we look at our shoes and hope someone else is going to fix it, I think we're in real trouble.
Well, I think that we have an absolutely staggering impact on the human population. Mm. The deaths are skyrocketing. They're continuing. I'm seeing in my practice, because I'm in medical practice, I am treating people who've had COVID in 2020. That was a pretty straightforward viral illness to treat early, and combination mm-hmm. medications kept. I didn't have a single patient go in the hospital. I didn't have anyone die because I treated them all very quickly, very aggressively, with the combination of medicines that Dr. Peter McCullough and his international team had developed by April of 2020. And many of us were using similar approaches that we came up with independently in March of 2020. Those patients were actually much easier to treat than the patients I'm seeing in 2021 and 2022 who've been vaccinated, because now the patients I'm seeing who are vaccinated and get COVID are sicker than the people I treated with COVID only in 2020. I think it speaks to the fact that the experimental COVID shots interfere with normal immune function. My patients now are coming back positive with atypical bacteria like mycoplasma. They're positive with cytomegalovirus, Epstein-Barr virus, as well as the SARS-CoV-2 viral syndrome. So all the way around, the people who've been vaccinated and get COVID or get a viral syndrome are now sicker. I'm seeing cancer patients who were in remission who are now having their cancer come back with a vengeance, out of control. This is staggering.
Yes.
Could you comment on some of the data that's coming out about the way the shots are interfering with normal immune function?
Yes, absolutely. They certainly are. And I'm not a clinician, but I'm horrified whilst also not being surprised by what you just told me. And I'll explain why in a moment. So certainly, I often look at the UK data. I'm a UK citizen, although I'm living and working in Florida, continuing to campaign. That's why we're here. And so certainly, yes, I think it's now clear, as I said, that the vaccines don't do the quote vaccines, the gene-based sequences, they don't do anything useful. Although people do raise antibodies in their blood to the spike protein, that doesn't mean it's giving you any protection, because blood antibodies are not how you protect yourself against a respiratory infection. You need all sorts of antibodies secreted into the airway surface liquid, and you need innate immune responses, like the ability of your airway lining cells, they normally release interferon, seriously, and that's what defends you. And then if you've got acquired immunity, you'll be secreting certain kinds of antibodies, different kind, into the airway surface. So that basically we've been lied to about the would-be expected properties of the vaccines, but to toxicity. Yeah, to toxicity. So there's at least two different kinds of problems. The first one is to do with the, as I mentioned earlier, your body then makes the viral spike protein, and that protein is toxic. So lots of the acute side effects, I think, are due to that. But additionally, the Moderna and Pfizer materials are wrapped in lipid nanoparticles. These things are intrinsically toxic in their own right. Maybe not so bad after one dose, but imagine if you've had four doses of this stuff. No one knows the fate of it. No one's been asked. The drug companies have not been asked to study where it goes over time. Seriously. I mean, can you imagine in any time prior to COVID, a medicine not having to be studied for where it goes? Well, I never have, not in my whole life. So these lipid nanoparticles they're pro-inflammatory, and they also distribute unevenly. Unfortunately, they have they tend to be attracted to spleen and the reproductive organs, certainly ovaries. And because ovaries drive the menstrual cycle, amongst other things, not an area specialty, but I know it is of yours, Lee. One of the things that we all heard about very early on were menstrual irregularities, really quite a frequency in women of all ages, prepubescent, all the way up to people who were postmenopausal. But there's a third problem, which my very good friend, Professor Sukirit Bhakti in Germany pointed out, and I chatted this to him with this. This is frightening. Basically, I mentioned earlier that wherever these gene-based materials land in your body after injection, and they may be taken up by some cells and not others, just by a game of crapshoot, really, luck. Those cells now express the spike protein, and the way it works is your cell will then stick it out on the surface to signal to the rest of your body, hey, I'm infected by whatever this virus, you need to come and resolve the situation. The way your body resolves it, I'm afraid, is by coming in close to those infected tissues and killing them. And that sounds brutal, and that's part of the symptoms you get, but that's the way to stop it replicating. If your body can identify very quickly the cells that are infected and send the shock troops of your immune system, like T cells, and you will kill them, as it were, in a controlled way. The problem that Sukirit found is that when you inject into the shoulder, and some of the vaccine will leave the depot site and it'll go in your lymph system to the lymph nodes under your arms, around your neck and so on. And that's normally where your body samples the outside world and works out what the hell's going on, what is it being invaded by. And Sukirit pointed out that if the T cells themselves, if your own immune surveillance cells take up some of this vaccine and express the spike protein, guess what? They get killed by other cells in your immune system. So I couldn't believe it, but once I thought about what he said, I thought this will be COVID-19 vaccine-induced immunosuppression or immunoincompetence. So I don't like using the word AIDS, VAIDS, vaccine-acquired immune deficiency syndrome. It's kind of right, but I think it'd be fairer to say that it's COVID-19 vaccine-induced immune suppression or immunoincompetence. And so what you just told me, Lee, is you have patients who've been vaccinated who are showing unusual bacterial infections. Oh, that's right. Most of the time we are living in a sea of bacteria and viruses and so on that we can cope with normally. We don't live sterile lives, but we're healthy. But if you then damage that, what's called immune surveillance, you stay healthy because you treat your body well, and then your immune system treats you well, and it undergoes this process called immune surveillance. Three major things immune surveillance does, which means if it's broken, these bad things are going to happen. One, it looks for bacterial infections, and you just mentioned that. And you're going to come up with unusual ones, and some of these unusual ones we don't have antibiotics for. It's not trivial. The next one is viruses, and we knew early on latent viruses, you know, like chickenpox, I can't remember the syndrome, shingles. Shingles was quite a frequent side effect. Well, I'm not surprised now. Now I understand some of the things it's doing. And I think other latent viruses, every one you can think of, maybe some of the liver-seeking viruses, the hepatitis and so on. But here's the one that's most frightening. Nature likes to reuse clever systems. And one of the clever systems for immune surveillance, I mentioned, if you're expressing a bit of a foreign pathogen, your body recognizes that fact, comes in close and destroys it, clean up the mess. The same system determines whether you've got a cancer. Like if a single cell has gone rogue, before it has a chance to grow, embed itself and start to damage you, your immune system recognizes that the surface markers have changed. This is a transformed cell, and your immune system goes in and kills it. So you're not aware of your immune surveillance keeping you well for decades. As soon as you damage that, I'm afraid now I cannot predict numbers. Directionally, we are going to see over the next year or so massive increase, I suspect, just because of the number of instances I'm hearing about in unusual bacterial infections, some of which will not be treatable. Re-emerging viral infections, some of whom have not been a problem for a person for decades. But the worst one is potentially that people will die of cancers, whichever ones produce the same sort of frequency of initiation. It's not necessarily how many you die of, it's how often does this tissue go wrong. So because if it's a tissue that goes wrong frequently, maybe lining cells in your gastrointestinal tract, that would be a guess. Blood-forming organs, that would be another one, bone marrow derived. So things like that, things that turn over tremendously quickly, will make the odd mistake, will be saved by your immune surveillance system and cleaned up. If that stops happening, well, I'm afraid that does not look good.
No, I think you're exactly right. And I really appreciate all of the things that you have been bringing up today, Dr. Yeadon, because I think people simply can't wrap their mind around the fact that our regulatory agencies are not protecting us. In fact, one of the things that is quite alarming, in addition to the rise in these latent bacterial viral infections that people have had, you know, shingles outbreaks. We've even had pulmonary zoster and death as a result after people have been vaccinated with the immune incompetence and immune suppression. And I agree with you. I think that is a better way to describe it, because the immune system is dysregulated. It's disrupted. It's not working the way it is supposed to for all of its normal surveillance functions. And the tumor suppressor gene, P53, tumor suppressor gene, is also turned off by these experimental shots, which in turn means that the normal cancer suppression mechanisms are not operative either. So all the way around, we have very serious problems. Yeah. And I was stunned to learn in a recent interview with in an article about what's going on in the UK that we are now 11 billion doses into this unparalleled global mass injection, debacle, I think is the best word. And more than 72% of the 6.1 million confirmed COVID-19 deaths have occurred since the vaccine rollout.
Wow.
72% of the 6.1 million COVID confirmed deaths have occurred since the vaccine rollout.
Wow.
And half of those deaths have occurred since mid-April, This is UK data. After all of the vulnerable population had ample time to get vaccinated.
So and, these are people people who should not have been, they weren't at high risk from the virus itself.
Right.
Those, yeah.
And so what the UK Health Agency did, and I will end with this and let people really think about this. What the UK Health Agency Health Security Agency did after coming up with that data, they've now announced that from April onwards, they will not be updating the section of their report on death rates by vaccination status.
Wow. That's
so not up. Only are they not protecting the public, but they are covering up the deaths. So thank you for being so courageous in helping us warn the public. If you've been vaccinated, get treatment for complications. Mm-hmm. If you are trying to be pressured, if someone's trying to pressure you to get the booster, we urge you to think about it. It may increase your risk of death, not help you in the long run.
Definitely.
Thank you, Dr. Yeadon.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed again, Dr. Lee.
We'll have you back.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Yeah. Thank you.
We'll have you back.
Okay.
I want to thank Dr. Yeadon for being with us today. He has truly been a courageous whistleblower, former chief scientific officer for Pfizer worldwide. And as we discussed, one of the most senior pharmaceutical research people speaking out about the risk that were not disclosed to the public about the experimental COVID shots. The devastation that has occurred worldwide as a result of the deaths, the medical complications, and permanent disability and injury that has hit many people is truly staggering. And this segment was designed to alert you to some of the serious problems that continue to plague the global population as a result of this massive push for universal vaccination with an experimental gene therapy agent. I really appreciate Dr. Yeadon being part of the program. And I appreciate that he is the chief scientific officer for Truth for Health Foundation. Go to our website, www.truthforhealth.org, and learn more about all of the work that we are doing as a public charity to alert the public to the dangers of what is happening under the guise of the COVID pandemic and the rollout of experimental products that have many adverse effects. And now we will be taking a break for the news. And then after the news, I'll be back with our new series, Sea Stories, with my co-host, Commander Robert Green of the U.S. Navy. And we will be talking about more of the issues going on in the U.S. military that is affecting others around the world. We will be hearing from Commander Green with the Navy. We will also be hearing from a U.S. Air Force Reserve C-17 pilot who has flown multiple combat missions in support of overseas contingency operations. And he is not only a reserve U.S. Air Force C-17 commander pilot now, but he also continues to fly domestically as an airline captain for one of the major U.S. commercial airlines. And we will be hearing from him about the double standard in the commercial sector in airline vaccine requirements and the military. Why has the U.S. military Department of Defense doubled down on the vaccine mandates at a time that commercial airline companies are backing off due to the complications medically? Stay tuned for the second hour of Truth for Health, Defending Our Freedom. We'll be back after the news.
To some, a baby's babbling doesn't mean much, but it does, especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Learn more at AutismSpeaks.org, brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.